is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. I'm a big fan of my next guest. His name is David Pogue. He is the tech columnist for the New York Times. He's been on the air with me many times, and we had him booked for yesterday's show, but in the most ironic thing that's happened this weekend, this guy who knows more about tech than anybody I know couldn't wake up with his alarm and missed yesterday's show. So I emailed him and said, okay, come on Sunday show, but for goodness sake, put the alarm on the other side of the room so you wake up in time to do it. And he has done that, and here he is. Hi, David, how are you?
I am here and deeply ashamed.
I just love the fact that you, a guy who has all sorts of things that beep and buzz all over the place, couldn't wake up.
I had turned in a book at 3:30 in the morning the night before, and I slept straight through it, and I'm aghast and horrified.
Well, I'm glad we connected today, and I want to talk to you about this new special that new series that you're doing for PBS. It's part of the Nova series. It'll air the next four Wednesdays, and it's actually a sequel to a four-part series you did this summer called Making Stuff. What can we look forward to in this new series?
You are absolutely right. So the first series was about a branch of science called material science, and it didn't sound very interesting to me either, but they came up with a pretty cool way of illustrating the scientific points by immersing me in all kinds of wild and, in my opinion, dangerous situations. To talk about the strength of steel, I rode in a demolition derby, and you know, I swam with sharks and went hang gliding and so on. So to everybody's astonishment, that first Making Stuff series got amazing ratings. And so this is season two. They've made four more. These shows are called Making Stuff Faster, Making Stuff Colder, Making Stuff Safer, and Making Stuff Wilder. And the Wilder is all about biomimicry. That's scientists stealing ideas from nature and incorporating them into their technology. A lot of robotics and stuff like that. So these ones are not limited to material science. They're cutting-edge stories from all over the world of science. And they are, I have to say, they are so good. They're actually much better than the first ones.
I've seen the preview, although I haven't seen the episodes yet. I've watched the preview, and the first thing that jumps out at me is, once again, you're playing with slime.
Somehow I always wind up covered with slime. Yeah, for Wilder, we looked at scientists in Toronto who are working with hagfish. These are the ugliest eels you've ever seen. And when attacked or threatened, they release these huge quantities of slime, like 10 times the size of the eel in a blob of slime. And the idea is they fill the mouth and the gills of whatever's trying to eat them with this slime. And suddenly that predator is more interested in breathing than eating. And so the idea is this slime contains fine threads that are stronger than spider silk, stronger than any known fiber, 10 times stronger than nylon, and they think if only they could make fabric out of this hagfish slime, they'd have something that doesn't require petroleum, like a lot of our clothes, and would be super, super strong. So, I mean, who would ever guess, you know?
I'm thinking maybe it's a diet aid. You get people who are hungry, they spray this hagfish slime in their mouth, they're not going to want to eat, just like the animals that are going after the hagfish.
There you go, the Paul Harris hagfish diet.
But when they're talking about turning this into something that might be useful for humans, is it that we're going to harvest this stuff from millions of hagfish, or are we going to try to reproduce that in a laboratory?
Well, that's an amazing question. The problem is you can't farm hagfish, so we could not, in fact, use thousands and thousands of hagfish in a tank somewhere. So it would be a matter of recreating it synthetically or rather isolating the proteins from real hagfish slime and trying to recreate it.
You also have something in the preview which looks like something I saw on a TED Talk earlier this year where a guy was demonstrating something that keeps products dry. You can put this stuff on there with a brush and then you drop water on it or you spray other materials on it, and those things will not adhere to whatever the surface is. Are you doing something similar in this an upcoming episode?
Yes, exactly right. It's not the same guy. It's a woman, and she's studied the pitcher plant, which is this crazy jungle plant. It looks like the flowers look like sort of pitchers of water. And when it gets wet, any bugs that walk on the leaves, walk on the edge of it, get incredibly slippery. The surface gets slippery, and the bug falls into the pitcher and get eaten like a Venus flytrap. This plant eats bugs by causing them to slip. And our scientist was fascinated about how that works, and she recreated it synthetically. So it's a two-layer spray, and you can put it on unbelievable numbers of things. You can put it on street signs so graffiti won't stick to it. You can put it on refrigerator elements so your refrigerator will never frost up because water just will not sit on the metal. You can spray it on cars and they'll never rust. I mean, it's just got incredible applications.
Incredible applications, and somebody's going to get really, really wealthy with these things. Do any of the things that you've looked at, either in this series or in the previous series or other stuff that these scientists have developed, have they become a big part of our modern life?
Many of them are just, you know, in the testing stages. That's what makes them news. That's what makes them great stories for us is discovering them. But yeah, some of them have seen the real world and are doing really well. From the first series, we interviewed these guys in Oregon who have developed a crazy spray for fuel trucks in the military. We had this big problem in Iraq where the bad guys would just shoot one bullet into a fuel truck on its way to our battlefield, and it would start leaking 150 gallons an hour of fuel. And by the time our fuel truck arrived to where it needed to go, it was empty. So this guy's spray creates like a rubberized coating on the truck, and the bullet goes through it and through the metal of the tank and just disappears, and the hole closes up instantly. And we use that now in the battlefield. We use that for the end of the war, and the problem totally went away. In fact, the Iraqi soldiers, the bad guys rather, would shoot the truck, see no effect, and think that they'd missed. we interviewed some of our soldiers who said they would look at the look of bafflement on these snipers, like, what happened?
That's great. Now, I'm guessing that the military is helping to fund some of these things. Where's the money for a lot of this other research coming from, David?
Man, you have no idea. The military is behind so many of these stories, especially in that Wilder episode. We saw a guy who has developed a hummingbird robot. It looks exactly like a hummingbird, size and shape, and it flies the same way, except it has cameras in its eyes, and it's remote controlled. And another guy at MIT has developed a robot the size of a bee, like a bumblebee, also remote controlled. 30 of them would equal the weight of one penny. And all of these are military contracts, but not all of them. In the first episode this Wednesday is making stuff faster, and we did a segment on the America's Cup boat, which of course is funded by Larry Ellison of Oracle.
Yep.
And I am, as far as I know, the last non-crew member who ever got to ride on an America's Cup boat, because they had one of the other teams had a terrible accident and a sailor died, so they no longer let regular journalists onto those boats. But it was an unbelievable experience. And we also looked at the world's fastest bicycle. Guess how fast the world's fastest bicycle goes in miles an hour?
I'm going to say 50 miles an hour.
83 miles an hour.
Wow.
Human-powered, just incredible. We went to Holland to study this team who came up with that bike. And the fun thing about some of those stories is that we did our interviews back in March, April, May, not knowing if they would win their races. In other words, the America's Cup boat race was not until September, and the world champion speed record race for bikes was not until late September also. But what made the show really great is that both of those guys won.
Yeah.
So it makes our stories even better.
Well, I got to tell you, what makes the stuff that you do for NOVA so fascinating to me is the obvious enthusiasm you have. And I the analogy I make is to when Alan Alda did the Scientific American TV show. He was obviously so into it and so amazed by what he sees. And I feel that same thing when I'm watching you.
Wow, well, I'm very flattered by that comparison. I am amazed. I mean, these are absolutely unbelievable stories. I don't I don't line up the stories. I don't find the scientists. The producers of Nova do that, and they are unbelievable. It's a very rarefied group of people who are so plugged into the world of cutting-edge science and also good writers and good directors.
Well, but they find you, and you're a good storyteller, and that helps as well. The show will be called Making More Stuff. The next four Wednesdays, you've got to watch it or DVR it on PBS. David Pogue, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend. America.